Are you ready to supercharge your music career?
You've come to the right place.
This is the Real Musicians Don't Starve podcast, the only show where you will learn firsthand how musicians just like you have turned their passions into highly successful long-term careers. I'm your host, Michael Elsner, and I'm so happy to have you with us today. Now, let's dive into this episode. So I have an awesome treat for you today. I have a fantastic songwriter. In fact, one of my favorite songwriters, just in general, not even songwriters who I've worked with, but just amazing songwriter who's joining us, Brian Davis. And if you are a fan of country music, you've definitely heard his songs. He's written for artists including Jason Aldean, Brantley Gilbert, Tyler Farr, Jared Neiman, Josh Phillips, Lee Bryce, Gretchen Wilson, and we're kind of just skimming the surface there. He's had a number one hit song. In fact, if you've ever heard the song One Hell of an Amen by Brantley Gilbert, that was written by Brian, as well as a lot of other Brantley songs that you're probably familiar with. And I've also just had a great privilege for the last 6 years to travel America and play with him on various tours and play shows pretty much all over the country. So thank you for coming and joining us today, Brian.
Oh, bro, thanks for having me, man. I love this.
Yeah, this is your story is awesome. And one of the things that I especially love about working with you, and I noticed it right off the bat. I think it was our very first conversation, is that unlike a lot of the other artists that I've worked with throughout my career, you've always been very focused on the business side. And, yeah. and that's one of the things that I've learned with a lot of the people that I've worked with who've been highly successful. They've really focused, you know, a lot of energy also on the business. And I've worked with a lot of artists over the years who never focused on the business, and they all just kind of disappeared, you know. So you've always, and even just prior to a hit and record, right into our conversation, you're already talking about, you know, business and whatnot. And so that seems to be a very core aspect of how you run, you know, how you approach music. And I'd love for you to share a little bit about your perspective of balancing the creative side of music with the business side of music.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Business has been the forefront. They call it music business for a reason, and that's a joke that kind of runs around town. But when you take it seriously, that is what it has to be. And so you have to build a product that is going to be a revenue stream. And if you can't do that, then the business, you're not going to stay in business long at all. So, and that's almost anything that we do, but especially in our business. But yes, the creative side, if you don't pair those two, then you can wind up with a bunch of super cool songs that mean nothing to anybody. And so in that regard, you're not going to be doing this very long. So when you find that balance and you pair those up well, you find out that the demographic that we're writing for, when you can pinpoint them and then you bring song ideas to the table that they relate to and that they're going to want to consume, you know, not just one or two times, but like for 10 or 15 years. And those types of songs become things that wind up on the radio, and then it becomes soundtracks to their lives. But the backbone of all that really is the business of it. You have to understand, you know, what they do for a living, like what brings them to the radio to make them want to turn on that station and listen to that particular music. And so when you really analyze and break it down, it still has this, the magic kind of has to be in the process, but you also have to have that guideline underneath it as well to kind of hold it all up. And so to me, business has always been that, and I've always had a focus on it for that reason. Although I have kind of compartmentalized the two, like I when I go in the room to write, I try to let the creative side do what it does within the confines of what I've structured and framework wise as for the business. And so as long as I'm inside of what the business is going to allow me to do, I can be as creative as I want to be inside of that. And so they can coexist that way. But again, the backbone of the whole process has to be that it's a business, you know, from Jump Street. So.
Yeah. Cause the reality is that you, every time you sit down to write a song, you're creating a product, or an asset. And, you know, I love how you call them true revenue streams.
right? You know, that's the terminology that you refer to it as, where you are creating something that becomes a long-term asset that can generate money for years and years and years to come.
Yep, absolutely, man. And the way that kind of process, when you really break it down, you can't have one without the other. I think that the creative thing has to be there, but when you understand that I'm clocking in, I'm building what we call, I kind of look at it to it in a crazy way, but like they don't make any more dirt, right? I mean, the earth is what it is. There's already people have gobbled up all the dirt, but every time we write a song, we basically are we're building real estate. You know, we're creating something that people are going to want to have to be a part of and consume. And so I've got, I don't know, probably 8 or 9 catalogs in town that source revenue for me on a regular basis, because they didn't exist prior to us thinking up the songs. Now the songs are housed inside of this business, and that catalog just sits there, and people have licensed it a lot like what you do as well, Mike, but they've licensed it, or they've cut them. And then, so now those little businesses are sitting over there just running for me. And that allows me to do more and more and more of that. So I got that catalog up and running. It's making me money. So now I can let it do its thing, not focus anymore on it, go to the next catalog, build that one, process again and again and again and again. And then, of course, the more of that you do, technically the better you get it, because the creative thing should become a little more easy as far as like knowing, okay, I've tried this 27 times and it's only worked one. So maybe I need to recalibrate that idea or that perspective, move forward. But constantly innovating and learning is, you know, that's business anyway. So
now you write with a lot of the artists that cut your songs to start with, yep, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
How many from at least in Nashville, what would you say the percentage is for songs that get cut on albums that are written by or with the artist versus songs that are just written by songwriters and then submitted to the artist?
Yeah. So again, discussing that, we're going to use the word business a ton, I think, in this conversation, but if the business of the song is correct, meaning like if I sat down and write a song with somebody who doesn't have a deal, or somebody that doesn't have any network, any outlets, then we've automatically dropped the percentage of that, right? So I sit down in the room with an artist who is going into cut within the next 6 months, and they've already told me what they need and what they want. And so now all I have to do is do all the due diligence in my world, which would be making sure that I've got, you know, 10 or 15 great ideas going into this, right? I know what they're about. I know where they're going. I've just really, really honed everything down to it's go time. And then we write a song. Like I call those high percentage rights at that point, because I have basically did all the preparations, and then that met the opportunity, and that typically creates success. So that's how I operate, you know. But yeah, the percentage of cuts personally that I've had a few, what we call outside cuts, would be me and another songwriter who have zero relation or affiliation with the camp that we're going after, the artists that we're going after. Those I've had some, but the majority, probably 80-85% of my rights that have become successful cuts and on radio and everything else are always with the artist or with the producer, because those two basically can dictate the majority of facilitating the song from its incubated, like, we just wrote this baby song and it's just a work tape, to the studio getting it cut. So I love the high percentage rights, and that's what I do a ton of, you know?
Yeah. That's what I always refer to as writing with purpose, at least like in the sync world. You know, I'm the same way. I don't just, a lot of people just go, hey, can we get together and write? And I think if you're not bringing anything to the table, then all of the work falls on me to do the production and then get it out, as opposed to being very purposeful and writing with other writers who already have their established connections. They're bringing their skill set and their team to the table, as well as, you know, my skill set and my team. And of course, then that just immediately increases the percentage and the opportunities to, you know, take those assets and actually get them actively working for you.
Exactly. Exactly, man.
When, you know, you have an interesting story, and I'd love you to share it briefly, but, you know, a lot of people would wonder, well, how do I get into the room with the artist? you know? Mm-hmm. And I know specifically a little bit about your story of how you connected with Brantley, or really kind of how Brantley Gilbert connected with you. and it happened at a show that you were playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'll back up and give you the clip notes of it real fast. But so I'm the kind of guy, when it comes to business, I don't pursue it. And I know that sounds crazy to say, because we are very driven and we grind hard at what we do for a living, but I believe in an organic aspect to it, always yields the best results. And so I never force myself into a room. I never put myself in a position where I kind of bully into anything. I just don't do that. I believe in the system and I believe in the process. And so I was having lunch one day with Jason Aldean's producer, Michael Knox. And he was telling me about this guy, Brantley, down in Georgia. And he was like, dude, if you guys got together, man, I'm telling you, write some great stuff. And I was like, bro, well, you know how I work, man. I don't push myself into rooms. If it happens organically, then I'm down. And he said, well, okay, man. I said, well, what is he doing? He said, he's just in Georgia, just wants to be famous in Georgia. I'm like, okay. Well, if for some reason we cross paths, great. So fast forward 2 months later, we're playing a show in Carolina, and he's coming on and co-headlining it with us. And had not spoken to this guy my whole entire life. Like, it just was one of those deals where it's out into the world now, you know, just good vibes out into the world. And here we wind up in this event together. And then within 30 minutes of hanging out and talking, a song idea came up. And then, so we went back on the bus and wrote that idea. And then that started this long friendship and then brotherhood pretty much that we enjoyed. And we still enjoyed it this day, but that's been, man, 13 years ago. So, but it's bizarre how you never know where you're going to be, what's going to happen. So I think always being prepared, but always being professional about the business side of it matters, you know, on such a huge level where a lot of people maybe can relax into certain situations and maybe miss it sometimes. But if you're always ready for whatever that opportunity is going to look like or be, then success is going to show up.
That's kind of really like the abundance mindset versus the scarcity mindset, whereas, you know, like I always try and emphasize, you attract opportunities, but you don't chase after them. Like in the licensing world, you know, there's a lot of people who teach you, like, well, you got to listen to a song, to a show, and figure out what they're using, and then you write music like that. And I'm so opposed to that approach, because that's the chasing approach.
Yep.
As opposed to, no, you just write the music that you're inspired to write. Yep. And then you actively put it out there. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that the opportunities will present themselves. And those are when the doors open, and they open quickly, as opposed to, I feel that when you chase things, a lot of times you hit your head against the wall and you keep pounding against that wall over and over and over until you're exhausted. And then you just quit.
Agreed. Yeah. And our business, you know, maybe some of the best advice I was given, it was kind of awkward and ironic how it even showed up, but there was this gentleman, his name was Mark Hall, and he had written a song called I Like It, I Love It, I Want Some More of It by Tim McGraw, and it was a monster song. And so getting to hang out and talk to him one day about it, and we were at a bar, and he had way too much to drink, and he's telling me, and see, I'm this green kid, and I'm just listening to him talk, and he goes, hey, man, I'll tell you what, Brian, if you want to be successful in this town, understand one thing. And I'm like, what is it? And he said, you have to be present to win. And then he proceeded to tell me that there were four guys that were at a bar having a conversation. The idea came up, and then they decided to go back to a publishing house and write that song that afternoon, straight from the bar over. And three guys walked, one guy drove. The guy that drove hit a telephone pole, missed the right completely, got a DUI. It was another crazy story, but missed the right completely, changed his life forever. Right. So I took that to heart, you know, and it was because for me, it was like, man, that's, if it's this guy who's got this level of success is telling me that's the secret, I'm going to adhere to that. So for so many years, man, I would come out, I'd drive 500 miles for one ride and then drive 500 miles back. But it was that war of attrition kind of scenario of being in this town and figuring out how to stay and learn and grow and innovate as you move forward. I mean, nowadays I've been in town 21 years. And to me, that being present to win stuck in my brain, and it kind of guided a lot of the drive going, okay, it might not be today, but maybe tomorrow is the day. You know what I mean? Kind of thing. So, but just a random moment.
You know, a lot of it boils down to, I remember actually we were out playing the Bluestone.
Oh yeah.
And I had a friend of mine from California who was out. I think you probably remember this. Like a friend of mine was out from California doing a conference down the street. And afterwards we hung out And she said something to me. She said something like, you know, you've had a, you know, great career. And I just responded with, I said, I've just stayed in the game long enough to let things happen. And a lot of times, you know, people don't stay in the game long enough. They expect that it's going to happen in a year or two. And the reality is that when you start getting into the game, it takes a number of years just to learn that, you know, a lot of it's just the mindset shift of, especially coming from small towns, you and I both came from small towns, going through that mindset shift of how to be a successful rock star musician to going, oh no, I actually have to treat this like a business. And now I have to approach it like a business owner.
Agreed. Absolutely, man. And I think that 10,000 hours thing is true. Like, you know, to master anything, they say that it takes 10,000 hours. And I do believe, man, you got to put the time in. Like the things that really are worth it in life aren't, they're not easy. They don't come just like that, man. They really take the grinding and the peeling it back, figuring it out, man. And quite honestly, another random little moment, but Craig Wiseman said one time, if you love something enough and you continue to do it, it will reveal all of its secrets to you. And that process is like a lot like writing. It is that, man. Cause sometimes you start out trying to develop an idea early when you're green in this business and you might miss it. You may take off down a road before you really think it through well, and then lose the idea halfway through and then just kind of be down and disappointed about you just wrecked a really good idea. But he's like, man, go at it again, change the perspective, you know, a little more right, a little more left, whatever, until you figure it out. But that's just another, you know, I mean, I don't know. I think our business is definitely a war of attrition without a doubt.
Yeah. So you've been in Nashville 21 years. So you moved in 2000, I'm assuming, right? I moved to Nashville at the very end of 98. And then of course went to LA in between. But if we look at the last 21 years, 21, 22 plus years, whatever, in the industry, a lot has changed. Like if you think we'll just say 2000, back in 2000, you know, you wrote a song and then you sent it off to a demo studio and they created demos and, you know, you had to, publisher had to pay money every time you needed a good sounding demo. And now you write a song and you do it in your bonus room at your house where you have a studio. And, you know, a day later you have a great recording because, you know, we have all the technology, course, you know, to do it ourselves. So, and that's something that's a skill set that I know that you've developed over the years. Obviously you're in your studio and your demos sound great that you do. What would you say to songwriters when it comes to the quality of their demos and how to approach the demo aspect of writing songs or presenting songs?
Yeah. So there are, I think you have to know the routes that the song is going to take to get to where it needs to go. Like for instance, say I write something with Lee Bryce. He's got a studio on his bus, a rolling studio on his bus, man. And so he has everything we need. So we build the track on the bus. He does the vocal on the bus. Basically it's a record by the time we come back. We'll be out for 4 or 5 days on the road, come back in, we'll have 3 records or 4 records done. It's crazy how he operates. So I know in that process, I don't have to do a ton. We'll handle most of that on the road, but I also know he loves stripped down work tapes, like, you know, and so a lot of times if I'm writing something, very rarely would I do this, but write something that I know I can get to him. And I know he likes the vibed out stuff that's just really stripped. So I'll bust a verse and chorus out here at the house on something and shoot it over to him on the road. If he happens to be on the West Coast or something on a run, and something pops up in my head and I bust it out, I'll do that. So, but ultimately I will say, I think it's a massive asset to understand Pro Tools or Logic. And that was one thing, like, you know, as far as like staying in the game, you know, like we discussed a minute ago, man, a big piece of that for me was going, you know what, man, I don't want to have to, no disrespect to our buddies in the studios. I love them. I mean, they're some of my best friends, but at the same time, when streaming started taking over, the revenue streams were light. I mean, there wasn't a lot of money in it. So we had to really make a decision on, is there a cheaper, better way to get the point across, meaning, you know, get these songs demoed, but not having an $800 or $1,000 demo. We could do them for $200 or $300. So I started picking up Pro Tools, just again, just adding to my skill set, you know, constantly adding to my skill sets. And so that was a big thing for me. And so now I'm pretty affluent at in Pro Tools, and I mean Logic a little bit. Pro Tools is more of my language, but so that's been something that that has been a massive asset. And then in those processes, you know, just know, I think know where you are in the process, because again, like I think we can spend a ton of time trying to build a record when all we need is a demo. So that's something that I've learned. I'm a perfectionist when it comes to like some of the stuff, and I'll, if I take off down a road, I'm going to do it right. And that's that. Sometimes we need to define what right needs to be, because sometimes, you know, just a real cool stripped down, you know, percussive aspect with acoustic and a great vocal can get the job done. And so, but sometimes you need, if it's the rowdier stuff, like the Brantley or Al Dean stuff, you might need to really get at it. So maybe that would be the time to take it to a studio. But I think you just, it's a case per case basis kind of thing, you know, but my advice would be to really understand the ears that are going to hear that as far as the gatekeepers are concerned. Is it a publisher you're trying to get to? Is it an artist you're trying to get to? And thinking about the competition, what, you know, if it's an Al Dean record that you're going after, you have to understand everybody else in town's doing the same thing, and the stuff that they're getting. I mean, they're spending the money and putting basically records in front of Al Dean. They're not putting demos in front of Al Dean. So you want to be comparable in regard to that. So there'll be times to make that a good decision like that, but maybe it's a new artist that doesn't get a lot of stuff pitched to him yet, but you feel like you got something for him. Understand what that looks like. If it's, you know, the producer, then shoot it to them. Producers tend to sometimes love a more stripped down approach to stuff because they still get to do their job. You know, as far as like, if you put something completely produced on the table, then they're like, well, what am I supposed to do now? You almost took me out of the equation. And so sometimes that can kind of backfire as well. So I would say know the direction you're going, the artist you're going after, and the ears that are going to hear it, and then just act accordingly as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, that's... always knowing who the end users and the outlet is so essential. And again, you know, I always say that demos just don't even exist in my world anymore, because now, you know, you can produce, you know, from your studio record quality music. And even with, like, you know, like you listen to stuff that's out now, you can't even tell if it's a live drummer or if it was programmed. And it's The technology is phenomenal.
Hey, I just want to jump in here for a second and let you know that if any of your goals over the next year include recording and releasing a new album, generating placements of your songs on TV shows and films, or just building a fan base that will sustain your music career, I want to invite you to my special workshop, Real Musicians Don't Starve. Now, in this workshop, we're going to focus on the three keys that are essential to your success. And you're going to walk away with an extremely powerful strategy that allows you to create your own wow factor. And this gives you the power to attract musical opportunities to you instead of constantly struggling and chasing after them. Now, you can check out this workshop for free at realmusiciansdontstarve.com/workshop. And once again, that's realmusiciansdontstarve.com/workshop. Now, back to the podcast.
You know, obviously the whole industry is full of ups and downs, you know, and it's not always, you know, we always talk about the successes and that's fun and inspiring, but then there's also a lot of, you know, there's a lot of rejection that comes with this too. You write songs, even with the artists you write songs with, not all the songs are obviously going to make it to the record, but when you're in like one of those troughs where it's things just aren't, you know, things just aren't going planned for a couple months at a time. What is the mindset that you have to be able to work through that period to get to the next, you know, successful rise, the next monumental moment?
Yeah. So for me, I think I have to remind myself on a pretty regular basis, even with the amount of success I've had, that failure is not final, if that makes any sense. Like, and a lot of times, we get in this business and we maybe have something that we sit down with artists and we just smoke these songs and we've done it right. And then they go in to cut them, and then just something doesn't go right or whatever. And they wind up getting scrapped from the project or whatever, man. Those are sometimes gut punches, and it's because we do pour so much of us into those moments and stuff, but those rejections, that they're not final either. I mean, that's one chance for you to take a lesson from that. You know what I mean? Because there was a reason why that didn't get all the way through to the other end of the gauntlet per se. But so for me, that's a big thing is reminding myself that failure isn't final and it's a lesson. And if I pick that lesson up and I move forward, then I'm sitting in a better spot than I was before. But I also have to think of it too, as like early on, I kind of had to run this other piece of advice through my brain quite often. And that was that because our business is so full of opportunity after opportunity, and you go and you knock, and then they go, no. And then you're like, man. So I had to start learning to say a ton to myself. No just means not yes yet. Mm-hmm. And so in that process, it kept me going because I understood that sometimes they just wanted to see how bad you wanted it. You know, some of my early publishing deals I got, knocking on doors. And they were like, nope, not good enough yet. And I heard that so many times. And I just looked at it and I went, man, you know what? That just means not yes yet. That no just means not yes yet. And I'm learning every time I go in there and hear no, I'm taking it back and reverse engineering that down and going, why, what did I miss in that process? Or why did we not get all the way to the finish line? No, you know, so that's a big piece of it. But, I think all of us learn daily too. I mean, I think we keep refining our business. We keep refining our skill sets. We keep refining our creativity on a regular basis to the point where we get to where we're hitting the target. You know, when we start out, maybe we catch the target 1 out of 100 times. And then as you continue to build and grow, maybe that number gets a little better. Maybe it's 10 out of 100, you know? And so nowadays that we've got a system, I've built a system in place to where I don't employ my business and my time unless I have kind of the perfect scenario, high percentage, right stuff. So now I'm having the ability to have, I still grind hard every day, but I grind smart in regard to going, okay, I've got Lee Bryce coming up. I know we're doing da, 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 da. And so I just sit here like in the mornings and I bust out like an hour of ideas, you know, getting just staying ahead of everything, you know, and being prepared for when we get on the bus and go, that we drag money home. We drag home revenue streams.
You know, one of the things that I've really liked about working with you over the years is that I've spent a lot of time, you know, in the front lounge of a bus, just, you know, listening to you talk or listening to you and other people talk. And one thing that you've always brought up a lot, it's one of the things I always loved about your perspective, and it's similar to my perspective, is you always talk about systems. And I have always been like, you know, a system oriented guy. Anytime there's something new, I figure out what works and I create a system. And that way I'm able to shut down, you know, the analytical part of my brain and just allow that system to run over and over and over and focus on, you know, the important stuff, maybe more the creative stuff. But you mentioned systems a lot. What would be, give me an example of like a system that you employ when it comes to your business, whether it's writing or whether it's the business side or whether it's the performing side.
Yeah. So just my system when it comes to writing, and it's the one that I run to every time. And I have six people that book my calendar. So it's pretty crazy, but I have the system where, so next week, I would have sat down, which I did, and I previewed my week coming. And then I know I have X number of artists. I know the artists I have coming up. And so I start doing due diligence on these artists. Typically, I've known most of these guys or some of these new guys I'm starting to work with. I've already started doing this weeks ahead. But I'll sit down and I'll go through what I consider due diligence on these artists. I look at what they've covered content wise. I look at melodies that they prefer, beat per minute that they gravitate toward, progressions that seem to be, you know, what they. So I systematically kind of break them down into, okay, what they've already covered is X. So they probably are going to want to do that from Jump Street. They're probably, if I left them to do their default thing, it's going to sound like that. But the producer or the label brought me in to get them to, I'm kind of known for the tempo stuff, as crazy as that sounds. So I know what they kind of want me in the room for. And I know if I leave this artist to his default or her default, then they'll go to the stuff that they already do all the time. I know they got plenty of that. So my job is now to start brainstorming and figuring out ideas creatively, how we can take grooves and move them out of their comfort zone a little bit to broaden their base, or to round out their show, or bring, you know, so maybe they've had three ballads and they desperately need, you know, a rocker in their show. And so I know that's something they're thinking about, but I want it to be on the radio too. So for me, I'm figuring out how I can design this song that's going to first benefit them in regard to what they need to be applicable for. But then I'm also thinking, let's make this radio so we have a great, we all went out of the process. And so that system, that it's nowadays, it runs itself. Like I know I see an artist coming, it takes me 5 minutes and I've broken them down to, okay, this is where we are. I just need to have ideas like blah, 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 and I just start busting out things. So that's kind of how that system works. And it does, you know, it has been beneficial. Now I've tweaked it through the years, but it stays super reliable in regard to that. And every time that I implement that system, I always wind up with a above average percentage that song is going to make that record, and that song is going to be something. So that's just one of my systems. I mean, of course, the artist side is a similar setup, but it's just deducting, you know, the demographic. Like, you know, say we're going to be playing a 10,000 cap room, and it's going to be, you know, whatever, you know, I have built a record of stuff that we're presenting to them on stage, that if I've done my job right, and we've all done our jobs right on stage, then we have broken down their defense mechanisms. Because some people that don't know us, just the human nature is to want to back up off of something or just throw up walls about it, you know? And so for me, I think walking on stage, there's ways that you can defeat their defense mechanisms immediately just through narrative or through a guitar lick or something that just make them go, I might like this guy, I might give him a chance, versus going, that's not the headliner, man, I don't want to hear it, you know, kind of thing. So I think when you start getting into the psychology of people, and that's where I think that land is, and that system's a little different in regard to that, but there's ways to, and again, it's not manipulating, it's just understanding the game. And then I've always said, if you show me the game and the rules behind the game, I can beat the game. And that's, you know, that's kind of that just another piece of that process. But so, I mean, and then the business side of it, as far as that system, it just is about how we can continue to do what we love to do. And we have to make money to do that. So it's a matter of just, you know, the backstory or being in the background of that, going, how can I serve this artist, or how can I, you know, build this record and understand how to connect these songs to those people, you know, that kind of stuff. So,
you know, long time ago, I learned that there are two moments in a show that everyone will remember. You know, people will remember the beginning of the show, and then they'll remember the ending of the show. Mm-hmm. For every Brian Davis show, anyone who shows up, you're going to remember the beginning, and you're going to remember the end, because both of those moments in the show are extremely powerful, and they're a lot of fun to be a part of. But you know, you do make a great statement of how even within the live performance, there is a system, and there has been a system since I joined you back in 2015. You know, for every single show, no matter where we're at in the lineup, whether we're the headliner or an opening act or somewhere in between for some type of festival, the set has always been very specifically designed for that purpose. Mm-hmm. Whether it's a long set or a short set, and that's one thing that I've always enjoyed also about the band. It's just also been a ferocious band to be a part of, but. But you know, one of the things that's great and I enjoy about your music in particular is that you write riffs, you know, and that's something that you don't hear a lot of. You know, a lot of people just grab an acoustic guitar and they just, you know, play the cowboy chords, but mm-hmm. your songs are really based around riffs. And that's I think it's also very specific to a lot of the artists that you work with.
Yeah.
You know, but that's definitely a super cool thing to be a part of and see how you write these songs around those riffs. And not only for you, but then, like I said, also for the other artists. But I would love to just take a moment now. And if we were to go back in time, back to, say, you know, 2000, when you first moved to Nashville, and you could sit down with yourself at that time in your life, what would be two pieces of advice that you would give to yourself that maybe would have made the journey maybe a little easier for you?
Two things. I think
maybe two things that looking back, maybe you do differently. Although I know that's a tough one because we like where we ended up, right?
Well, absolutely. I do think, you know, one thing that I would do is I would understand the game 360 a lot earlier. If that makes sense. Like I would have, like I learned through a lot of trial and error to just from kind of beating my head against the wall to a degree, as far as all this was concerned early on, because I didn't understand that like, say I have an idea, a song idea, and then I'm going to write that song, and I'm writing it for being on stage and melting face. You know, that was my mindset. Right. But the thing about it is that radio doesn't want that. Radio wants something that's more vanilla in regard to don't have somebody be passionate about it to the point where they would change the station. Because if they change the station, then they lose the Arbitron rating. You know, the whole story there, it goes down and they lose revenue basically every time the station changes per se. So I had to figure out, I kind of got that chip on my shoulder a little bit. And I was like, well, radio doesn't get it. I'm going to go do my thing. And now I look at it and I go, if I'd had that true 360 understanding of the business completely, meaning like what you have to do is understand the gatekeepers all the way up and all the way down. And you have to understand everybody's capacities. They're, you know, they're all human. They all have needs. They all have, you know, they're trying to operate and be validated inside of their positions all the way across the board from the time the song is written until it's a number one hit, you know, all the way to the number, you know, to the number one parties and the, you know, the BMI, all that stuff. So it was like all these different things. If I would have had that, I think I would have had a little different perspective or probably would have made my road a little easier just from the idea of going, I understand that everybody else is in this game too. And so that's probably one. And I think the versatility might be the second thing, like as far as making sure that I didn't go super narrow minded on things, like kind of looked around and went, well, what if we don't, you know, melt, you know, the faces of this slice of pie? What if we broaden it a hair or we kind of move out a little bit, and then we get, instead of having 1 million people listening, we get, you know, 15 million people listening by considering opening up a little bit in certain ways, you know, like content wise. And I don't know. And I think that the competitiveness about our business, though, it is like you have to be pedaled down, like, you know, especially on the artist side of our business, man. It's like you can't walk on stage and kind of go, man, let's kind of do this today. No, it's like, you know, our mindset when we walk on stage, man, it's like, let's destroy this place. And in regard to, let's give them everything we have and then some, so that all of the work that we did writing the songs and rehearsing and all that stuff comes out and we leave nothing in the cases, right? That's how that works, man. But that it's so competitive that I think at the end of the day, like, have a little grace into it too, I guess, like, in, you know, as it all shakes down, because it's like we do what we do and we're super hard on ourselves in regard to that. But I don't know. I probably would tell that 20-year-old me to give himself a little grace too, because our business is not, it doesn't exist inside of our business in regard to it's, hey man, what did you do today? Because I know you just had number ones yesterday, but this is today, you know. And instead of going, and maybe I should revel, you know, revel in this, in the idea that we have been in this business for a minute and we still have the privilege of being in this business, you know, kind of thing. So
here's my final question for you. For those who aren't familiar with the Brian Davis catalog of songs, what would you say would be the top two or three songs that best exemplify who you are as a songwriter that people could go listen to right now on YouTube or Spotify or whatever?
Yeah. So I think like probably Lights in My Hometown. I mean, I've always been a writer. I have to live what I write. It just, I believe in that, you know, to me, it's a, the song fuels the stage and the stage fuels the song. So that was a big piece for me. And so, but I have to go live to do all that stuff. And so probably Lights in My Hometown would give you a really good understanding of, in my opinion, what we're about. And then, I mean, of course, One Hell of an Amen. I do believe songs are therapy. And I mean, there are songs to drink beer to. There are songs, I think, you know, to have a shoulder to cry on. There's, I think our music, that's one of the things I love about music, is it hits people, in a way that kind of nothing else can. I mean, and so songs like One Hell of an Amen, it served in a capacity that I'm really proud of, like in regard to it. And again, like the accolades are awesome. I love the fact that we have those, but to me, the stories and the life-changing parts of, you know, of people's lives who were the listeners of the song, who come and they're like, hey man, that got me through something really hard. Those kind of moments, to me, they'll trump, you know, the revenue from and the accolades every time, man. So there's that. But I don't know. I mean, and my wife and I, like, there's a song called, it's called Against the World, that I think it exemplifies, like, small town, how when you get something that, when you get the real thing, man, the real love thing, and then the town just does a really good job of going, man. And it's like, so it turns out to be, you know, my wife and I against the world, kind of, you know, as far as like, I was the guy who should not have had her. So it was kind of funny how that works. But so I could probably hang my hat on that one too. But so.
All three amazing songs and fun ones to perform as well. Yeah. Man, I always like to share my Real Musicians Don't Starve manifesto for the listeners who are listening right now. And this conversation with you is can really sum it up really well in the sense of, or with the summary of, you have to focus on the business. When you focus on the business, really a whole world of opportunities will open up for you in the music space without having to worry about, you know, chasing after every opportunity, you know, or chasing down things to make things happen and, you know, trying to kick down doors and stuff like that. If you stay authentic to who you are and you focus on the business, opportunities will come to you. And as real musicians, we are business owners and our business is music. And a business is simply an organization where value is provided in order to make a profit. And unlike starving musicians who operate with a mindset of scarcity and fear, as success-driven musicians, we operate with a mindset of abundance, confidence, and service. We are doers, we are dreamers, we are creators, and we are achievers. We know that our true value is determined by how many people we serve and how well we serve them, because our truth is that real musicians don't starve.
Amen.
Thanks, man. I mean, to me, it really just boils down to one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on so much is because I knew that you would bring so much of a business perspective to the table. And like I said, you know, we've talked business many, many, many times, and I've always enjoyed that aspect of how you approach, especially being such a creative, prolific songwriter. How you do approach music like a business. Mm-hmm. I've been around many songwriters who I would consider are, you know, great songwriters or naturally gifted songwriters, but they've never done anything simply because they only focused on writing and they never focused on how they could actually take that asset and monetize it and turn it into a long-term revenue stream for them. And sadly, none of them have careers in the industry. They have great songs. But they've never been able to just focus on the business side long enough to turn that into a highly profitable career for them. And so it's really sad. But at the same point, that's one of the things that really, in my opinion, differentiates those who become professional musicians and career musicians versus those who just treat it like a hobby.
Yep. Agreed, man. Absolutely agree.
So you have you have 8 albums that you've released throughout your career. And where can people go to learn more about you, to see upcoming tour dates and you know, check out some of the albums that you have?
All of your digital service providers have all the access to all that stuff, Spotify, Apple Music, all that stuff, man. And yeah, so or you can go to BrianDavisLive.com, find it there, or Brian Davis Live on Instagram. That's the handle and everything is Brian Davis, L-I-V-E. So yeah, check it out, man. And love it and listen to it.
Yeah. If you have an opportunity, I really do want to encourage you to, if you have an opportunity to see Brian live, I want to encourage you to check out the band. I might be there too. Maybe we'll see. But for the last number of years that I've been playing with Brian throughout my career, I've played with some great bands, but I have to say that the band that we've had for a number of years is definitely the most ferocious band that I've ever been a part of. Just unbelievable grade A, musicians and great show, great performance. It's a high energy show from start to finish. And especially if you're a country music fan, a lot of the songs that are in the set are songs that you would know. So that's what also makes it a great show. There's definitely some great moments, because people recognize a lot of the songs. So definitely get a chance. If you get a chance to check Brian out live, go check it out. And I think I even played on one of the albums, Stripped Down and Turned Up, I think.
Stripped Down and Turned Up. Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
So, all right. Well, I want to thank you guys for joining us in this episode, and we will chat with you later.
Yeah. Thank you again, brother, for having me, man.
Awesome. Thanks, Brian.